Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on illegal immigration when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, the multinational corporations, lobbies, and the news media. But we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. That's not in the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights? It isn't afforded to one who is indifferent thereto because it's a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor. It's valid only when it's insisted upon by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, that comes from a case called U.S. v. Johnson. That's why I contend that we should listen more to our judges and listen a whole lot less to our politicians and lawyers. Now, listen to what that judge said in that statement. He said, "Your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney. They're only claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person." Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to our archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, talking about illegal immigration. It reminds me of the Titanic. You know, you're faced with a problem, and then the question arises, well, how do we solve that problem? In the case of the Titanic, you've got a problem that's insoluble. You can't save the ship, but you could save yourself off of the ship. And this immigration problem is just one of many. We've got an economic problem here in the United States that's also insoluble. The time to have solved the economic problem was about 25 years ago. Now, the problem has grown to such a proportion that you can't solve it. The same thing is true with immigration. This immigration thing could have been solved 25 years ago, maybe even 10 or 15 years ago, but it can't be solved now. It's because it's gone beyond the tipping point. In today's program, I'm going to show you what the population problem is. We got a population problem here. It's growing by geometric progression. And geometric progression means that it grows 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and so on. That means that it doubles every so often. And this doubling time creates this gigantic population growth. Once it reaches critical mass, it will collapse. And then it's during that collapse that you got all this death and destruction. Now, for instance, when we're looking at rabbit population out, say, in the deserts of the West, you go out here to Utah and Arizona and places like that, there's a few rabbits out there, a few jackrabbits. And pretty soon, if the feed is there, the jackrabbits will multiply from a pair of jackrabbits to 4, and then 8, and then 16 and 32. Well, how many of those doublings do you go through before you reach astronomical numbers or projections? And the answer to that is it's not very many. If you were to take a penny and double it 32 times, you'd come up with 40 million on the last doubling. From 31 to 32, it's 40 million. Now add 40 to everything that's gone on before, and that's 80 million. So you can double this population here if you start off with two people, and then you want to ask yourself, well, what's the doubling time? And then the doubling time is about every 40 years. Or no, I think it was every 20 years. Every 20 years. How long would it take Adam and Eve, doubling every 20 years, to populate the world? And the answer is, in 1656 years, where the flood came, there would be 2.5 billion people. Then what would happen 20 years after 1656? We would have 5 billion people. And then the next doubling would be 20 years later, and then they would have 10 billion people. And then 20, 40, 80, 160 billion, and so on. Well, the population of the United States back in 1900 was 63 million. By 1940, it was up to 140 million. So it had more than doubled in that period of time, just 40 years, two generations. Well, two generations as we count it, one generation as the scripture counts it. Then it doubled from 140 to about 280 million from 1940 to about 1980. Then we moved up from 1980 to 2000, and I forget the exact year here, but it's 2006. On October the 17th, 2006, the population of the United States crossed 300 million. Well, now, that 300 million is projected to double again to 600 million, and then 600 million to 1,200,000,000, and there's a doubling time, and the projected doubling time is to 2075. So if the population of the United States grows at the same rate that it has been growing over the last 25 years, over the next 65 years, we'll have 1 billion people here in the country by the year 2075. That's pretty important, because the people who are coming here to this country want to live the American lifestyle, and the American lifestyle consumes a tremendous amount of natural resources. There's a certain amount of water. For instance, regardless what are some of the resulting consequences of population growth, watch this. 1 acre of farmland or wild land is lost for every person added to the population. Every time we add one new mouth here in the United States to feed, to clothe, to house, it takes 1 acre of land, 43,560 square feet, one small city block. It takes 25.6 barrels of oil consumed annually for every person added. 25.6 barrels. Let's just do that. 25.6 times 42. 1,075 gallons of gasoline, 1,075 gallons of oil, gasoline, and related products for every new person added to our population. It takes 12,331 kilowatt hours of electricity consumed annually for every person added. Did you know that you consume 12,331 kilowatt hours of electricity every year? Well, so does everybody else, and that's 300 million more of us. We're going to use 1,932 cubic meters of water withdrawn annually from the aquifers of America for every person added. Can you imagine that? 1,932 cubic meters. Now, a meter is about 3 by 3. So it goes 3 by 3 by 3. So a cubic meter then has 3 times 3 is 9 times 3 is 27 cubic feet of water. And in round numbers, a cubic foot of water is about 7 gallons. So we've got 1,932 times 27 times 7.5 is 391,230 gallons of water per year per person. Isn't that amazing? Now, it's 320,000 cubic feet of water in 1 acre foot. 1 acre foot. That's 43,560 cubic feet of water. That's 1 foot deep on 1 acre. And that's 320,000 gallons, 1 acre foot. And that's for every person what we're adding. We're going to add the population of the United States now, 300 million, plus 300 million, plus another 300 million, plus another 100 million. And we're going to take that many acres of farmland off. We're going to multiply that times 25.6 barrels. We're going to add to that 12,331 kilowatts. And we're going to take out that many acre feet of water. Boys and girls, that's unsustainable. There isn't that much here. You can't take that much here. It ain't there. So that means there's going to be a dramatic discount in your standard of living. You're going to have to live on a whole lot less. That's going to make it a whole lot less desirable for aliens to come here. But it's worse than that. You see, you have to take a cut in your standard of living equal to what all the rest of the people are going to be doing. We've reached the point beyond which sustainability can support this kind of a lifestyle and standard of living. And that's assuming, of course, that things continue on the way that they are. Now, it has to stop at some point in time or slow down pretty dramatically, because if it doesn't, then 2075 with a billion people here, and you take a billion acres of land out of the national inventory of land. You've got to have places for people to build their houses. You've got to have places for these people to grow their food. You've got to have places for these people to have recreation and parks and streets and highways. And all of that comes out of the landmass as you add more people. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, according to the Census Bureau, these figures, more than two-thirds of current and future population growth is the result of immigration. And illegal immigration is by far the biggest component of this immigration, with the trend accelerating in the last few decades. So remember that as the population of the United States just crossed the 300 million mark on October the 17th, 2006, it is quickly heading for 400 million, projected for as early as 2029. In considering the U.S. population growth, it is worth noting that the growth is currently exceeding the high growth rates of most projections, and at the present rate, the U.S. population will end up at about 500 million in 2050 and a billion by 2100, and maybe even a billion by 2075 if things don't change real fast. Now, maybe Dr. Abernathy is correct after all, and the numbers of illegal aliens flowing across the border are far, far higher than the government is telling us. But regardless, the population of the United States is increasing at an alarming rate. According to the U.S. Immigration and Population Growth Report, from the Support U.S. Population Stabilization, which is an anti-immigration splinter group of the Sierra Club, that believes uncontrolled immigration is the biggest impact on the environment. Unless the country's immigration policies change, and change soon, the U.S. population will double in this century. If SUSPS is right, then the current population trends continue. By the year 2020, the U.S. will add enough additional population to create another New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore, San Francisco, Dallas, and Denver, and more every year. Illegal immigration is the biggest component of the population explosion. And you think the freeways are crowded now. Well, go here for the Earth's population counter. And with all the press given to the population crossing the 300 million mark, did you see this Latino baby is 300 millionth American, where it was reported the U.S. population only reached 100 million in 1915, and that's when Woodrow Wilson was president, and the cost of a new home was $3,200, or about $64,158 in 2006 dollars, according to the census. So you can forget the part about the race ethnicity of the 300 millionth American, not surprisingly, but who cares? The important point is, got any houses in your city going for $64,158? Can you imagine what the current price will be with a few hundred million more people competing for land and houses? Now, regardless, what are some of the resulting consequences of this population growth? And I just told you, 1 acre of farmland is lost, 25.6 barrels of oil, 12,331 kilowatt hours of electricity, and 1,932 cubic meters of water. Where's all that going to come from? To give you an illustration, the Ogallala Aquifer up here in the Midwest is already running dry. They don't expect it to have more than 20 years more water in it. Some areas, it's already dry. It produces half of the food in America, that one aquifer, and it's going dry over the next 20 years. And you're going to add all these billion, the hundreds of millions of people to the U.S. population, are you? Now, while future alternative energy sources should reduce the oil consumption on a per-person basis, and increased efficiencies should reduce the electricity, most likely, it won't be anywhere near enough to offset a doubling or tripling of the population, especially in such a short period of time. Additionally, other than in Hawaii, there is no more land being made. In fact, in the global warming folks, or if the global warming folks are right, then over the same time period, much of the U.S. current line and coastal cities will end up underwater. I don't hold much hope out for global warming, but I do hold a lot of hope out for the creator of the universe to create this global warming. Now, there's a lot to be said about Bible prophecy. We'll pick that Bible prophecy up here in a little bit, not in this program, but we'll take a look, because Bible prophecy tells us what's coming. That's like getting a report on the Titanic that says this ship is going to hit an iceberg in about 48 hours. So get ready, because you got to get off if you're going to save your life. Now, for the people that got off the Titanic, no big problem. They got off and lived their lives and lived another day. For the people that stayed on it, they all died. There were no survivors that didn't get off in the lifeboats. Now, here in the United States, there's going to be about a 10% survival rate. And that's what we see here in Bible prophecy, about 10%. That's exactly what the Club of Rome is earmarking. And so I think it's safe bet if God says 10%, and then the Illuminati and the powers that be say 10%, then everybody's pretty well on cue here that we're going to save about 10%. Now, that's the good news. Bad news is 90% of the people in the world are going to die. That's 90% of us here. that doesn't sound very good. So I need some way to save myself out of this dilemma. And I think every one of us is in the same boat. That's where the rubber meets the road. But going on here with this population explosion, regardless of the final number, all of these additional people will require more water. In the arid and semi-arid states of New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California, Colorado, Nevada, and Utah, where much of the high growth is taking place, water supplies are already at the critical stage. Aquifers are rapidly falling, and there is only so much water in the meager rivers, as noted by some climatologists in such reports as climate change means hunger and thirst for billions. The report, many believe that global warming will only make conditions worse. For a very sobering revelation on the impact of illegal immigration on the U.S. and the soaring population, read The Effect of Mass Immigration on Population Change, Increased Impact on Large Metropolitan Areas. And for details on immigration to the United States, see Immigration Facts, which reports that approximately 58% of the 1.1 million immigrants who obtained lawful permanent residence in fiscal year 2005 were relatives of U.S. citizens or permanent residents. These large families and high birth rates of the Latino component of immigration, legal and illegal, is what's driving this exponential population growth. Exponential, that means it doubles 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. That's unsustainable. Populations of rabbits grow exponentially until they reach critical mass, and then there's a mass die-off, which occurs in just a few months. So you can have millions of rabbits, and all of a sudden they die off, and then you're down to a few hundred again, scattered all over the desert. And then when the conditions are right, they'll grow exponentially again. Human beings have been doing that for the last 300 or 400 years. We're now at a population of 7 billion, the next doubling over a period of 28 years. The population now is going to double every 28 years, and we're approaching 7 billion now. Well, the world isn't feeding all of its people very well right now with 7 billion, so what do you think we're going to do with 14, 28, or 56 billion on the planet? The raw materials, the resources for those people to live here simply aren't here. Now, as noted in Why We Should Address U.S. Population Growth, if the U.S. population continues to grow like the last decade, 13% every 10 years, mathematically the U.S. will have half of China's current population within the lifetimes of today's children. In the meantime, fragile border desert areas are being trampled and trashed by all of the illegal immigrants coming across the southern border. Now, for more information on the environmental damage that's being done, see border crossings and the impact on fragile desert environments. Now, in 1996, the U.S. Department of Education estimated that 2.6 million new kindergarten through 12th grade students will be added to America's public schools in the coming decade, and many are children of illegal aliens. A study by the California Department of Education of the state's public schools revealed that one student in four could not speak English well enough to understand what was going on in the classroom. Now, the school districts of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Nashville, and North Carolina have student bodies in which 80, 85, and 150 languages are spoken, respectively. Now, in the FAERS report, Breaking the Piggy Bank, How Illegal Immigration is Sending Schools into the Red, He estimates that educating the children of illegal aliens currently costs us about $28.6 billion a year. That's excluding the cost of the supplemental feeding programs, as noted in the education section. Now, the actual costs may be closer to $34.5 billion, and if so, then just the education costs for the children of illegal aliens costs almost $121 for each and every citizen of the United States. Now, deduct the bottom 40% who pay no taxes, and the per-person amount doubles for the tax-paying Americans. Remember, 40% of Americans at the bottom don't pay taxes. They get a refund. They get a check. And the top of the pyramid, they don't pay any taxes either. They pass those costs on to us when they're manufacturing. Let's give you an illustration of this hidden tax. President Obama raised our effective tax rate in the United States by $75,000 per McDonald's franchise. That's the estimate that the McDonald's company came up with. They said, well, in order for us to raise this amount of money in which we're going to be taxed, then each McDonald's franchise with 30 employees is going to have to kick up $75,000 to the government. Now remember, McDonald's and corporations don't pay tax. They collect tax. So when the customer comes in, he's going to be paying an extra nickel or a dime for a hamburger and an extra nickel or a dime for a bag of French fries, another nickel or dime for the price of a Coke to go along with it. In the final analysis, all of us consumers out here are going to pay that $1 trillion for that national health care system. Then there's a second kicker that comes in. They're estimating that thing at around three-quarters of $1 trillion. Listen, government is always wrong, and they're always wrong on the low side by anywhere from 2 to 4 times the amount. Do you remember they said that the Iraq war would cost $50 billion? Yeah, that's right. Same thing with the Afghani war. You know, we've been over there for 10 years fighting for those people over there, spending money every day of the week. So in the final analysis, it's the little guys that pay. It's not the big guys. It's not the corporations that are going to be paying this tax. And what that tells us then is that you and I have to pay all this. And then you got 1 billion people coming, and we're going to absorb this into our economy. Oh, no, that isn't going to happen. It mathematically doesn't work. Now, going on here, the overcrowding crisis in American schools is directly attributable to high immigration. And the actual cost may be closer to $35 billion when we get down to the bottom line. And if so, then just the education cost for the children of illegal aliens will cost $121 for every U.S. citizen in the United States. And that's above that bottom tier. Deduct the bottom 40% of the population, you don't pay any taxes. So at the top, they don't pay taxes. Down at the very bottom, they don't pay taxes. And all of us in the middle are going to pay it all. So, without school-age immigrants and the children of immigrants, school enrollment would not have risen at all during the past decade. One in every five students has an immigrant parent. And one quarter of these children are foreign-born themselves. Immigration will account for 96% of the future increase in the school-age population over the next 50 years. Now, if immigration continues at current rates, classrooms will be overcrowded well into the future, and efforts to reduce school and class size will be doomed to failure. Now, for more information on the impact on schools, see the 2004 report from the GAO. It's called Illegal Alien School Children. The GAO puts it out. and that's called the Government Accountability Office, and it's the Illegal Alien School Children is the name of the report that you're looking for. Now, in a current population survey done by the Bureau of Labor and Census Bureau, the poverty rate for immigrants was noted to be 50%. So if you want to know what their poverty rate is, it's half. Now, 50%, the 1996 welfare and Medicaid provision provided to elderly non-citizen immigrant or legal immigrants alone cost American taxpayers $10 billion. Now, although the actual number is suspected of being much higher, the high poverty rate of illegal aliens will increase the number of people without health care and needing welfare, making health care and welfare reform much more difficult and expensive to address. It's also worth noting that when illegal aliens take jobs from the working poor Americans, it also causes more of them to go on welfare. All right, so let's take a look at our black population, the lower 40%. Those are the people that currently or had in the past those jobs at the bottom of the economic scale. Now, with the Mexicans coming in and taking those jobs, those people end up on welfare. Now, if the continuation of the immigrant rate of increase continues, if it continues, you will have less and less jobs for more and more people. And that assumes that we're not even going to outsource any more jobs. We're not going to ship any more to China or Taiwan or Indonesia. So the illegal aliens are taking the jobs from the working poor Americans, which then turns around and causes them to go on welfare. See, they can go on welfare because they've got the right cards. So it works out well for everybody. The illegal alien comes up. He can't get welfare benefits, but he takes the job of the guy that can. That's the black worker who now goes over and signs up for welfare, and both of them are happy. But again, as we pointed out, you know, we're getting into unsustainable territory here. Now, although a bit dated for a collective impact of illegal immigration on the quality of life in 10 selected cities, given the increase in immigration since the report was published, the impacts are even greater now because the real-life impact of mass migration or immigration policies in each of the 50 states examining factors such as poverty, housing, smog, water, schools, land density, labor, traffic, farmland, and health care and other services see immigration in your backyard. This impacts upon the air quality, water quality, schools, land density, labor, traffic, farmland, and the health care of other services. Now, to see the consequences of unchecked and out-of-control immigration policies, which details the moral, economic, social, and environmental reasons for reducing U.S. immigration back to traditional levels. 362 pages is the size of the report, and this free book from Numbers USA details how the 500% increase in immigration numbers has played an integral part in destroying middle-class occupations and turning them into minimum-wage jobs. The book describes many low occupations where this has been happening, and it gives special attention to the way that the immigration policy of Congress has reduced economic opportunity for black Americans, deepened the poverty of farm workers, and then destroyed the health of poultry plant employees and turned many construction, manufacturing, and other jobs into low-paying work that Americans won't do. So we are creating a Frankenstein monster here. And it gets worse as the welfare state tries to cope with the increased number of these immigrants coming in. They're attracted because of the welfare benefits. We have to pay the welfare benefits to keep these people working in their jobs. And the reason for that is they're taking the jobs of the people who are the natives. The natives are going on welfare because they're unemployed. We got 9 million of those right now. 9 million. Wait until that number doubles to 18 million. It's not sustainable today. If you can't sustain it at 9 million today on welfare, what in the hell are you going to do when you get 18? All right, so tuck that one away in your heart. Now, we took a look at this so far. We've looked at how many are there. Then we took a look at the costs that equal the budget deficit in California. Then we saw that the government is systematically destroying business in America. And then we took a look at the alien criminal costs. Now we take a look at what happens when these people dispossess the natives of their jobs, put them on welfare. Now, if you dispossess them of their jobs and you put them on welfare, and the immigrants aren't paying their fair share, they put in a dollar and take out three. Now you've got the guys that were self-sufficient, who were putting in a dollar and weren't taking out anything. Now you've got them taken. They're putting nothing into the pie and they're taking out two. So William Bendix used to say, you know what a revolting development this has turned out to be. Now, to see the consequences of unchecked and out-of-control immigration policies, see the case against immigration, which details the moral, economic, social, and environmental reasons for reducing U.S. immigration back to its traditional levels. That's 362 pages. And this free book from Numbers USA details how the 500% increase in immigration numbers has played an integral part in destroying middle-class occupations and turning them into minimum-wage jobs. And the book describes many occupations where this has been happening, and it gives special attention to the way that the immigration policy of Congress has reduced economic opportunity for black Americans. For an interesting take on the impact of immigration, both legal and illegal, that ties a lot of these issues together, see the 1995 testimony of the House Judiciary Committee on Immigration by Norman Matloff. It's called The Adverse Impacts of Immigration on Minorities. Dr. Norman Matloff, The Adverse Impacts of Immigration on Minorities. Now, this report is called The Dark Side of Illegal Immigration. If you'd like to get a copy of it, you can probably get it from www.usillegalaliens.com. Simple enough. Just go to the website. It's called www.usillegalaliens.com. It's called The Dark Side of Illegal Immigration. If you'd like to get these facts and figures for yourself, it's about a 35-page report. Hey, I'm running overtime here. I'm getting a little bit later here, so let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then we invite you to go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. GeorgeGordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's George Gordon. Excuse me. If you're online, you can go to georgegordon.org and then click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We're talking about illegal immigration, and we're talking about the population aspects of it in this program. Now, we are indeed a nation of immigrants with diverse ancestries, and in fact, though a stereotypical American would have been or would have had British ancestors who came to this continent during the 1700s, if not earlier, the fact is that rather few of us actually fit that description. The adventurous spirits of those who came to this country in earlier times contributed greatly to America's success. Immigration continues to add vitality to our social and our society today, our social lives and our society today, but conditions have changed significantly from those earlier times, and the current high rate of immigration does have its downsides. One very important class of which is the adverse impact that immigration has on minorities. And that is, in particular, immigration adversely impacts native-born African Americans. Immigration adversely impacts both native-born and earlier arriving immigrant Asian Americans and Latino Americans. And the sharp distinction made by many politicians and political activists between legal and illegal immigration are artificial and unwarranted. The adverse impacts on minorities are due to both legal and illegal immigration, except when otherwise qualified. The use of the term immigration in this report will mean both legal and illegal immigration. All right, now, the adverse impacts are both economic and non-economic in nature. Increased job competition, lowered wages, reduced opportunities for entrepreneurs, reductions in quality of education and houses and housing, and increased exposure to disease. Next, immigration is resulting in diminished attention being paid to the problems of African Americans and other native-born minorities as model minority Asian immigrants pour into the country. African Americans are becoming the forgotten minority, and much worse than U.S. natives. Immigrants tend to have racist attitudes toward African Americans. The U.S., by accepting large numbers of immigrants, is in effect importing racism. Even activists in immigrant communities have publicly conceded that the current influx of immigrants is much higher than their communities can absorb. Poll after poll in recent years has shown that minorities recognize these adverse impacts and wish for relief in the form of reduced levels of both legal and illegal immigration. The testimony goes on to make a few more points, and here are some examples of adverse economic impacts on minorities. Immigrants are entering the United States faster than minority communities can absorb them. And when asked why most Latino Americans wish to see reduced immigration, now notice that this is the Mexicans themselves, or the Latinos who are already here. Antonia Hernandez, the president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, explained that migration, legal and undocumented, does have an impact on our economy, particularly in competition with the Latino community. There is an issue of wage depression, as in the garment industry, which is predominantly immigrant, of keeping wages down because of the flow of traffic of people. Now, I mentioned this to you. It happened in Argentina. It happens everywhere where this is done. But in Argentina, just recently, this is 2003, their economy imploded, and that's where ours is headed. It's coming to an implosion. That is, we can't pay our debts. When that happens, the stock market will crash. That's just like it did the last time. The first round, when markets became unstable because people weren't paying their mortgages. When they didn't pay their mortgages, their CDOs went upside down, then Bear Stearns went upside down, then Lehman Brothers went upside down, then investors around the world came unhinged, and they stopped investing. Then we had a meltdown. Stock market went down to 6,500. What has happened so far hasn't been a recovery. It's been an emergency management process by which the government has printed $29 trillion. They've either made the money or they have created credits and guarantees to reliquefy the economy. And it's not just here, it's around the world. We're in the process of going into another collapse. This time, we're expecting the stock market to go down probably in the neighborhood of 1,500 to 2,000. It'll reach its bottom when it hits about 90%, when it's lost about 90%. That's what happened the last time. Now, all of a sudden, you've got all of these people in the country over here compounding the problem of unemployment. That's what happened in Argentina. They had a bidding war on bidding the price of wages down lower. Now, that's what you'll see here in the United States. It'll be the same thing here, probably worldwide. To keep our minds off of that, governments and politicians usually go to war. Have you been noticing the ratcheting up of the talk about North Korea and about Iran? And you just saw one the other day where the Turks were trying to get some supplies into Palestine, into the Gaza Strip, and then the Jews attacked them, killed, I don't know, 9 or 10 passengers, you know, on the ships. These are areas of instability, and they're not instable or unstable for no good reason. We're getting ready for war. when these economic collapses come, like we saw in the 1930s, it gives rise to people like Joe Stalin and the Ukrainian starvation, and then we got the Hitler program and World War II. And then we came out of that. When we came out of that, we went through a period of relative prosperity. But you can't maintain the prosperity over here when things are out of balance. And right now, everything's out of balance. Now, the next war that comes up, we'll be talking about World War III. World War III. The Bible calls that Armageddon. Armed Megiddo. Where we're talking about nuclear bomb war. The second coming. Hey, and listen, I didn't write this. I'm just reporting to you. Take a look at Revelation chapter 3 and see what you see there. And then we'll take a look here at Revelation 8, verse 8, Revelation 11, verse 6, Revelation 16, verse 4, talking about the oceans being turned to blood. And I got to thinking about this oil spill out here in the Gulf. Did you notice that oil is red? See, where I'm from, oil is black. And then I never thought for a minute that we would see the oceans turned to blood from red oil. I don't know that that's the meaning of that scripture there in Revelation 8, 8, 11, 6, and 16, 4, but I'm starting to get suspicious. I was watching the Lehrer NewsHour the other night, and they were talking with three experts on there about the technology needed for closing off this oil well 5,000 feet down in the Gulf of Mexico. And all three of them pointed out that they were really surprised that there was no technology to do that. Now, here we are. We're out here drilling down here deeper and deeper. You know, we were out in the continental shelf, and then we got out a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper. Pretty soon, we're down here 5,000 feet. You can drill a well 18,000 feet deep in the bedrock underneath 5,000 feet of water. That's pretty significant. Really significant. I was amazed just at the technology. Now, I would have assumed, and that's what these three experts said, that the oil industry had a backup plan for a blowout at 5,000 feet. After all, we had this happen to us in the Santa Barbara Channel, and all three of them said, nope, now we found out we have the technology for drilling the wells, but we don't have the technology for sealing them off if there's a blowout. And we're playing it by ear. And we don't know what we're doing, and we're inventing the technology under crisis circumstances. And I was sitting there watching the Lehrer NewsHour, and I said, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. Surely these people you're out here drilling these oil wells at this depth and you haven't got a plan, a backup plan for one of these blowouts, which is about the worst case scenario. This thing is really producing oil. It's around, they're telling us now it's around 20,000 barrels a day. And one of the experts said this thing could be blowing this 20,000 barrels a day out of there for 30 years. 30 years if they can't shut it off. Now they're drilling a relief well, and they've got all kinds of plans over there. They're building new equipment. Boys and girls, wouldn't you think that they would have this new equipment that they're going to use on this blowout already on the ship in the event that the blowout occurred? This is what we call backup plan. Didn't anybody ever think that someday the pipe would break down under the water? It is true, they got one of these, they got this shutoff valve down there, but did anybody ever say, what if the shutoff valve doesn't work, then what do you do? You know, as a businessman, we try to anticipate, plan A, plan B, and plan C. Here at the law school, we have a subsistence and survival school, and we divide it up into three plans. We have plan A, that's where you're at today. And then when it's no longer tenable for you to live in Los Angeles, you got a plan B. Where are you going to go when you can't live in Los Angeles because of the implosion? Civil disorder? And then when you get to plan B, what happens if that one goes haywire? Do you have a plan C? a cave someplace, a cabin in the mountains, something out there in the wilderness of Canada. Well, anyway, they didn't plan for it, and we've got three scriptures here in the scripture that tell us that the oceans are going to be turned to blood. Well, at least one third of it. And that thing could run for years, and that 20,000 barrels a day. Oh, my God. Can you imagine what that thing is going to be like, in years to come, if every year we have hurricanes and they wash that stuff up on the beaches? Can you people imagine around the Gulf Coast what life is going to be like on all the beaches from Key West to Brownsville with 20,000 barrels of oil coming out of the ground a day? And that's going on for year after year after year? Well, that's what was on the news last night. So get ready for it. That's a prospect. And that's why I said, I think that thing's got God's fingerprints on it. And we'll have to watch and see how this one comes out. It may well be that we can get this one shut off. And we're all hoping that we can. Because, boy, this is going to be a mess if they don't, isn't it? All right, so now we're talking about things being much more difficult for the Hispanics, the blacks, and the Asians here in America, who are the old-timers because of the new immigrants coming in, both legal and illegal, which is why people are starting to call for, hey, listen, we got to shut this thing down. Well, unfortunately, it's already too late to shut it down, because if you shut the entire thing off in the morning, tomorrow morning, the population growth, based upon the number of people that you've already admitted, the 30 million between 1964 and last night at 5 o'clock, all they have to do is just keep breeding, just like they're doing right now today, and the population is going to hit a billion in the year 1975. You don't have to have any more. They've already got that scoped out. That one's in the bag. Now, you're going to have to reduce the population growth if you're going to do anything constructive. Now, the Chinese have been working on that for about 30 or 40 years. They got it down to about replacement or less. It's one child per family. You think you're going to get the immigrants in here to do that? Is that in the offing? You think you're going to get that done to next week or next month? See, the die is already cast. What we've already done in the past has already set it up. It's like our sovereign debt problem. If you think the Greeks have a problem, or the Italians, the Americans and the British and the Japanese, our fundamentals in our economics are worse than the Greeks, the Italians, and the Portuguese. Worse. That has already been set in cement. That isn't going to change, and that $333,000 that we all owe is just another tip of the iceberg that's sticking out of the water. Now we got this immigration problem. The tip sticking out of the water. Now you got this population growth problem sticking out of the water. I tell you, boys and girls, we got some big problems for which we need to get off this boat, which we'll talk about tomorrow. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.